All right, well, hello and welcome back to the StoneX Grain and Oilseed Podcast. We have a very exciting guest today. I'm here with Krista Swanson of the National Corn Growers Association. She is the lead economist. We're very lucky to have her on the program today. You know, Krista, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Craig. I'm glad to be able to talk with you and your audience.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. And you know, just so everyone knows, we were down in Commodity Classic in Houston this year, and we got to meet and talk with some of the people from National Corn Growers Association. And they said they come on, and it's been great. So, you know, Krista, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and also your role at the NCGA?
Yeah, sure. So I have roots in farming. I actually grew up on a farm and also now actively farm with my husband and his family. We grow corn and soybeans and raise a herd of kids. but one of the greatest things is getting to raise our four kids on the farm. So career-wise, I started in farm tax and accounting. And then I worked for about 6.5 years in farm loan portfolio analysis and risk management. And then just before joining NCGA, I worked for 5 years for the University of Illinois as a research analyst, studying farm economics and policy impacts on agriculture. And if anyone is that's listening is a follower of a farm doc at the University of Illinois, the work I did was frequently published on there. In November 2022, I joined National Corn Growers Association, as you already said, as the lead economist. And in that role, I spent a lot of time analyzing industry markets and policy initiatives, and really with the goal of being able to provide strategic economic input to the organization. National Corn Growers, provide a little background on the organization for anyone who's not familiar. It was founded in 1957, and we represent nearly 40,000 dues-paying corn grower members, but also the interests of the more than 300,000 farmers who contribute to the corn checkoff programs in their states. And National Corn Growers Association and our affiliated state associations and checkoff organizations, we're all working together to try to protect and advance corn growers' interests.
Awesome. Well, that is fantastic. Really good to know too. I don't think you hear enough about the NCGA here. So it's good to know what you do. So as the lead economist, you know, as I was talking to some of my clients and the conversations I had down in Commodity Classic, you know, demand drivers for corn, it came up a lot because you know what the production is and the acres and the yield, and they stay fairly consistent unless you have a drought. But ethanol has been a big part of the growth in corn for the past 15 years. And of course, there's feed and exports. But, you know, what are you guys seeing as, you know, for, let's say, demand growth in the corn market?
Yeah. So first, I just want to talk a little bit about why, you know, why demand is important. You mentioned you heard that a lot at Commodity Classic. And actually, at Commodity Classic, the voting delegates of our organization adopted a new strategic plan. And, you know, the strategic plan is very centered on market demand and what we can do to enhance and increase those demand opportunities. So certainly an important point to our organization. So when we just came off of 2023, which was a year where we produced, U.S. farmers produced a record corn crop of 15.3 billion bushels and a record corn yield as well. And you know, this marketing year that we're in right now using that crop, you know, demand is stronger than last year. So that's a positive, but we're looking at ending stocks for the year that are, you know, higher than what we've had in recent years. And a number I like to focus on is, you know, our stocks relative to our use. It sort of gives us some perspective into, you know, what do we have left over relative to what we're using in a given year. And for the current 2023-24 year, we're looking at ending stocks at 14.9%, stocks to use at 14.9%. That was below 10% for the past 3 years. When this really starts to get challenging is when we look ahead to how the 2024 balance sheet is setting up, and we're looking at stocks to use at approximately like 17 to 18%. And the last time that we had a stocks to use ratio above 17% was in 2005, which was before the ethanol expansion era. So, that really underscores the importance of demand opportunities looking ahead, like exactly what you indicated. But I wanted to just kind of set that stage a little bit and explain that. So, yeah, we have like three primary users of corn. Exports for the current year are about 14% of corn use, and ethanol about 37%, and feed about 39% under the current projections. And so those three demand channels utilize a lot of our corn. And on the export side, I'll kind of maybe just briefly mention exports. I know you were asking more about ethanol side, but exports, we've had some challenges in the past couple years. Brazil has really grown as a competitor in corn exports. We also had, climate really wasn't working in our favor in terms of some of the Mississippi River issues last summer. It slowed the ability for us to get corn from the Midwest out into those Gulf ports. We had a relatively strong dollar value, which means our corn is more expensive in the world market relative to some competitors. So the positive side here is that, the dollar value has softened some. We aren't having those issues on the Mississippi River. We've had, some moisture return, and we've seen some of the traditional buyer nations come back into the market. So all, some positives on that front. On the feed side, the livestock industry has definitely had its set of challenges. When we look at the lower corn prices and lower prices of really all feed grain commodities isn't great for those feed grain farmers, but that's been a positive for those livestock farmers in terms of their margins and lower feed costs. And but we definitely look to ways that we can support the livestock industry as it is an important consumer of our product as well. And then ethanol. As we think about some of the policies that we have and goals for the future, and this administration's goals for electric car adoption and increasing electric vehicles, ethanol a lot our ethanol is blended into gasoline. So if gasoline use goes down into the future, then ethanol use also set up to decline. In the very short term, over the next couple years, the Energy and Min Information Administration actually forecasts that 2024 motor gasoline will be a little higher compared to 2023, and the outlook for 25 is similar as well. And so, in the short run, we tend to have that ethanol use sort of staying at a plateau under current policy, but certainly an area that could be challenged, and we're working on ways to increase those blend rates for ethanol, and also ethanol as potential feedstock in sustainable aviation fuel.
Yeah, and I do want to get to that in a second here, but and that's been, I mean, honestly, that was a great kind of lay of the land, state of where we are with demand for corn, and really appreciate that. There's something you said in the beginning, though, that is really near and dear to my heart, and it was stock to usage percentage, right? And it's something that, if you're and with your time and your background in economics and working at FarmDoc and University of Illinois, it makes sense to me that that's something that you focus on too. My background's in economics, and just for the listener here, just so I want to, what Krista was saying is, if we're at a 17 or 18% stock to usage, that also means probably around a 2.9 to 3 billion carryout, like somewhere in there, give or take 100, 200 million bushels. And back before, let's say, prior to 2020, when we started having, the COVID shutdowns, if we were going to be normally, corn would be trading on the board between like 350 and 425. And in a normal setting. And then if we were getting down to harvest on like a 2.5 or 3 billion carryout, which would be about a 15% carry stock to usage, prices would be sub four, normally. I think it's hard to gauge where price ranges are going to be now because there has been structural inflation in the economy. But what it does tell me, and just listen to Christy here, is over this year and probably next year, that unless we get a drought or something like that, we're going to be probably have a relatively high stock to usage level. And when it comes to marketing, especially on the farm side, we're going to be marketing grain in a low priced environment. And for the listeners out here, the kind of strategies that we use, or when we get, or when we make sales recommendations, or a farmer should be using the carry and selling ahead instead of storing and waiting, that's going to change over, that behavior is likely to change a little bit, or is going to have to change because of the high stock to usage. Now, Krista, I mean, when stock to usage is that high, like when we're at 15, 16, 17%, can you just let the audience know a little bit, like, to get a big rally in corn like we saw in like 2020 and 22, I mean, a lot of corn has to disappear from the balance sheet, right, to make things tight again. There's just seems like there's a ton of room for error if case you have a little bit less yield or a little less acreage. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I would say maybe more the opposite, like the thinking about from the farmer perspective, like you mentioned the room for error if there's less production or a lower yield. But even more concerning is higher production and higher yields. And if we start seeing that number climb further, the pressure that puts on price. I mean, already the setup for 2024, we'll just use the numbers USDA currently has until we know more as planting approaches here. But currently that outlook for price, the market year average price that a farmer would receive for their corn is 440 for this upcoming year. And so, and for reference, in 2022, that 2022 crop, the average price was $6.54. So we're talking about a pretty substantial drop. When you think about the percent drop, about the over 30% drop in price from 22 to 24. So anyway, where I want to say that number again, that $4.40 price, USDA's cost of production for corn for the 24 crop, from their most recent cost of production stats comes out to a 480 per bushel. So, farmers are in this situation where the price that they're looking at is under by a pretty substantial amount that cost of production. And so, yeah, definitely a tight position to be in at the farm level. And what if yields even higher, productions even higher, we start to see greater pressure on that price figure.
Right.
But those costs remain the same. A lot of those costs of growing the 24 corn crop, even though, well, the southern US has plantings has started in some of those areas. But in a lot of our corn growing regions, we haven't even started planting yet, and farmers have already paid a lot of those costs of production. So even if there would be some softening in prices, a lot of the inputs have already been bought.
Right. Yeah, they have, and decisions have been made, and it's going to be interesting. And I just know from working with farmers here for the past 15, 20 years, when you have years of high prices, which is a result of tight ending stocks and tight stock to usage numbers, and that's when you see the fund money, which helps farmers out a lot when we're going up, usually comes in because they're exactly what Krista was talking about. Like when you have tight stocks, you have to ration more. You have to price ration more. And when you don't, the money comes out or it gets bearish, and you see basically the funds get short the market here. In the years where we kind of have just lower, when we in years where we had that higher prices, it was easier to market old crop, keep it in the bin, kind of see what the summer rally was. And that just, I mean, what that just may not be the case this year, because if we do have more acres than USDA initially thought, and Krista makes a great point, like if the yields end up, if we finally get a good growing season and the yields are better, that is going to put downward pressure on the market. So I think in years past, whether it be me or StoneX or other market commentators and advisors out there, have probably said, hey, you can kind of wait or let's see what happens with old crop. If there was that, it does make sense to consider to be a little bit more aggressive on forward sales if economists like myself and Arlen Suderman or people from the whether it be someone like Krista or whoever you see out there are talking about larger stocks. That's usually a sign to be maybe a little bit more aggressive on new crop. It's just because the carry works against you pretty much all year from new crop going into old crop as it eventually meets the cash price. So with that said, Krista, you were talking about ethanol and sustainable aviation fuel and how that could be a future driver for corn and ethanol. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I heard about that at Commodity Classic too, and we saw that talk on Friday where the head of the EPA was there and the ag secretary, and they were talking about that also, maybe new uses for corn.
Yeah, so like as you mentioned, that day was March 1st, and that had been the date that EPA had previously indicated, or so this is the kind of a this is a decision also coming from the Department of Treasury because of the tax credits associated with the Inflation Reduction Act that would be for those sustainable aviation fuel production. So they had previously said that they were going to have a decision on the modeling that would be used by March 1st. So there was a lot of expectations around, the Secretary Vilsack and the Director of EPA being at Commodity Classic and it being March 1st. They announced that day rather than announcing exactly what the modeling would entail. So they had previously said that they were planning to use the GREET model, which is the model of that we are advocating for, but they had previously said that they were planning to make some, modifications to it. And so then on March 1st, the announcement wasn't, that what are the modifications? It was that they needed some more time. And so, I think we do appreciate the importance of getting the modeling right. That's definitely something that we are advocating for. But we understand that the delay is some questions about indirect land use change and climate smart agriculture. And so I guess for anyone that's, not familiar with what is happening here, there's some models that take into account indirect land use change. And so when we look back a little bit of history here on let's just focus on corn production, corn acres have increased. If we look back a few decades, corn acres are currently higher than a few decades ago. But actually, corn acres of today are lower than what we saw in the early 1900s. So, we're talking about land that was in production. There was, at different points in our history, if you go back several decades, there was conservation type of programs that took, there was set aside programs that took land out of production. So if you pick one of those years to compare to, or one of those eras, I should say, to compare to, then it looks like we've added we've had this land use change. But if you look back farther in history, you can see that isn't true because we're talking about land coming back out of something that was purposefully set aside. So anyway, that's kind of some of the discrepancy in this is what era is it comparing to and the penalty that can come upon corn if we compare to one of those eras of the conservation of many acres being conservation programs is set aside. So anyway, we have been advocating for, a science-based decision that takes that into account. And we're, anxiously waiting for the administration to those departments of the administration, I guess I should say, or those departments to announce what type of modeling we're going to be using. And really, the ability of corn ethanol to be a potential a financially viable feedstock, I should say, for sustainable aviation fuel is heavily hinges on that decision. And so that's why it's such an important thing that we're waiting on. And when we look at a promising green energy market and a realistic path to achieving the United States sustainable aviation fuel goals, like the ability of corn ethanol to qualify for that is huge. And so it's like if we want to meet these goals, then the modeling needs to, be right. And again, like the importance of that land use change factor being tied to the right time period.
So that's interesting. So that plays into the GREET calculation, and then it'll be either, it'll give it a more positive, I guess, score for corn ethanol to be used in sustainable aviation fuel.
Yeah, or on the other hand, could, result in unwarranted penalties on corn and other ag feedstocks if the wrong, if we use a look back period to when there was those periods of set asides.
I got it. All right. Well, very good. Well, that's very interesting. I definitely didn't know how important that was. And I, it was a little disappointing being down there on March 1st. I was kind of hoping to hear what the decision will be. And I think a lot of people, were anticipating it too. But you're right; they have to get it right. And if they need more time to get this model down for how renewable fuels and policy is going to go forward, that makes a whole lot of sense. Another thing that we talked a little bit about down there was, is there a market for ethanol to be exported? Like, will countries like Japan, will they want to use ethanol for their renewable fuel policy? And if they did, they probably wouldn't produce it there. They may be importing it. So is there room for growth and also ethanol exports going forward?
Yeah, there's definitely room for growth in ethanol exports. So this is sort of a different policy challenge. But if there are some nations that want to utilize more renewable fuels. One of the challenges, so there's certainly new markets that ethanol can expand into. There are some markets that want to utilize, they want to grow in their advanced biofuels. And one of the holdups that the US ethanol industry has is that ethanol is not classified in the United States as an advanced biofuel. And so there are some nations where our ability to export to them has been limited because of that designation. So that's another, policy initiative that our organization has been advocating for that would, it's more of a classification type of what bucket does ethanol fall in compared to other biofuels. But there's a lot of, as with any sort of policy designation, there's a lot of complications and, other sides and so it's not as straightforward or simple as maybe it seems like it should be. But definitely something that, our organization and, some of the, in the United States, we have a couple ethanol organizations and biofuels-based organizations that are also, working on how can we expand ethanol exports. Another challenge on the export front has been that Brazil has been a export destination for U.S. ethanol, in the past. And as Brazil has, worked on, there's been a lot of investment in recent years in ethanol production in Brazil, especially as they've, really expanded corn production. And they've historically had sugarcane, sugar-based ethanol and are, expanding some of those facilities as well as constructing some new ones to make corn-based ethanol. And they have imposed a tariff on imports of U.S. ethanol, presumably an effort to bolster the domestic growth in ethanol production there. But that's been a challenge as well, because if with that tariff it makes those who were importing in Brazil. So again, definitely opportunity that we're working on, and just another comment for National Corn Growers Association, whether we're talking about ethanol exports or exports of livestock and meat products. Well, whatever we can do to help improve exports of those, you know, that's still exports of corn in another form. We focused a lot on what's that export number on the corn balance sheet, but if we can utilize more of our corn in ethanol and feed and you know, bolster exports of those products, you know, that's still using more US corn.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Definitely. Well, listen, Krista, this has been fantastic. It's been great to have you on the show. I mean, before we wrap up here, you're a farmer too, and is there anything exciting you've either been working on or based on your unique, skill set and position as an economist with the NCGA, do you want to maybe give the farmers a little bit of either advice or what to look for, what to look out for here in the next year or two?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you kind of hit on this a little bit already, but you know, I guess paying attention to some of those market signals. I mean, I know that's something that farmers are already doing, but you know, as we look at the setup for the next couple years, so while I'm working hard, and our organization is working hard as well, National Corn Growers Association is working hard on how can we increase demand opportunities. Some of these things, you know, they can take years to develop. And so you know, in the short run, the current setup looks like we're gonna have, you know, plenty of excess in terms of stocks, and you really dug into explaining the stocks to use ratio and price and you know some of what that means in terms of making some of those market decisions and thinking about you know, when we're in this type of environment versus a tight stocks environment, how that impacts your marketing plan and marketing practices. And so I guess that's kind of one point. And then I would just say that, you know, for any farmers listening that are gearing up for planting, I wish you a successful planting season. We'll you know, hope the weather cooperates for us to get in the fields and get the crop in the ground.
Yeah, well said there. Yeah, and me working with StoneX here and doing this kind of content, like my next webinar is actually going to be focused on basically, marketing corn in a low priced environment because, unless we get a drought here, there's just it could be a little bit of a challenge compared to the past couple of years that we've experienced. All right. Well, listen, Krista, thank you so much for coming on. Is there, if people aren't members, they can go to your website, or do you guys do education, or is it just be a member with National Corn Growers Association? How do you like farmers and everyone to
Yeah,
interact with your group?
great question. So yes, you can find out more on the National Corn Growers Association website, but also, you know, in our organization, it's truly a grassroots level organization, and membership starts at the state level as well. So you can also search for a Corn Growers Association in your state. If you are in a state that doesn't have one, you can reach out to someone at National Corn Growers, or you can reach out to you know, me, and I can point you in the right direction. I'll say my email is Swanson,
Yes.
SWANSON at NCGA.com. And you know, if you're don't know where to look, I'd be happy to point you in the right direction. So yeah.
That's great. Yeah, and you know what, Krista? I'll put your email address in the show notes for the podcast. So anyone listening to this on the podcast, you can look at your phone in the show notes, and Krista's email address will be there. You just have to click it, and you can shoot her an email.
Okay, yep. Tell me what state you're in, and I can point you in the right direction.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming on, Krista. This has been a great interview, and I know the audience really appreciates you coming on.
Yeah, we'll have, again, thank you for the invitation and the opportunity to talk with you.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.